Ethical consumers have been boycotting the food company Nestlé for more than 20 years. The reason for the boycott is the company's aggressive selling of formula baby milk in the developing world. Nestlé stands accused of marketing powdered milk direct to poor mothers and even bribing doctors in some parts of the world to tell women that formula milk is better for their babies than breast milk. Mothers buying formula milk waste what little money they have. They have no way of making up safe, clean formula feeds, and their babies can die. Now, though, some of those who have opposed Nestlé over the years have softened because the company insists that it has changed. Nestlé has even appointed its own ombudsman to investigate any future allegations of bad practice. In a moment, we'll be discussing whether companies can really shake off a bad image. But first, Melanie Abbott has been looking at the Nestlé case.
The cries of a baby suffering from malnutrition in India. In a documentary made by Yorkshire Television, the plight of this baby with its swollen stomach was blamed by doctors on companies who marketed powdered infant milk to the third world.
Bottle feeding is the primary and the only cause in this particular child for this problem. Severe malnutrition and gastroenteritis, upper respiratory tract, pneumonia, they keep coming to us.
Those companies selling milk formula to developing countries have been criticized for encouraging mothers to use powdered formula by giving out incentives to health workers and providing free supplies. Nestlé, one of the biggest companies, has been boycotted by ethical consumers for more than two decades. Patty Randall from the Baby Milk Action Group says it was sparked by an investigation into how companies like Nestlé promoted baby milk.
The catalyst of consumer action took off in 1974 with the publication of a book by War and Want, a report into the whole thing called Baby Killer Scandal, which was examining the marketing of breast milk substitutes and their impact on breastfeeding and infant health.
The boycott was taken up by others and remained fairly solid until the mid-1990s, when after intense lobbying from Nestlé, the Church of England Synod lifted its ban on its products. And the Royal College of Midwives did the same soon after. But even then, people like John Madeley from the church's Oxford diocese were not convinced.
The market in baby milk is worth at least £2,000 million a year. And at Nestlé's AGM in May this year, the company's chairman is reported to have said there will be no change in Nestlé's marketing policy. It's business as usual, and there's big business at stake, but lives are at stake as well.
The lifting of this boycott did very little to change Nestlé's image, as satire at the time illustrated.
I love a cup of Nestlé's Nescafé in the morning.
Yes, and it tastes even better when you know that the World Health Organization has condemned Nestlé for their aggressive marketing techniques in the third world.
But now the company is fighting back by employing an ombudsman and publishing a 50-page sustainability review document. Some cynics believe this was sparked by scandals like one in Pakistan 5 years ago. A salesman there, Syed Amarraza, resigned from Nestlé, claiming unethical practices were still going on.
He witnessed that a baby died and he was dying, and he was accused by the doctor of being at fault for marketing the product to the mother. And he issued a report which showed that they were bribing doctors and that they were giving sales incentives to staff, and they were even running baby shows and all sorts of things.
There have been doubts about the ombudsman's impartiality, but Hilary Parsons from Nestlé UK says the company is committed to investigating every complaint.
There's going to be ombudsman at two levels. At the group level, there'll be a Nestlé group ombudsman. And then at the local level, our local markets are being asked to have local ombudsmen.
Despite this move, Barry Coates from the World Development Movement believes often it will take a long time for people's perceptions about a company to change.
I think it's a very hard road for these companies to go on. Increasingly, there's a whole spectrum of companies out there who are claiming all sorts of ethical credentials with very little verification behind them. And members of the public, I think, are rightfully suspicious about companies who claim to have had a conversion on the road to wherever.
This seemed obvious last year when some comedians at the Edinburgh Festival boycotted the Perrier Awards because the company is owned by Nestlé. Suzanne Merrill organised alternative awards at the Bongo Club. She believes Nestlé should consider moving out of sub-Saharan Africa completely.
It actually works out a hell of a lot cheaper for a mother to buy nutritious food for herself and breastfeed and therefore pass on the relative things to the child than actually be using powdered milk.
So do consumers really demand a big gesture from companies to show their commitment to change? Hilary Parsons believes a lot of the problems that still exist are only caused by misinterpretation.
Many of the concerns or allegations that are made against us are often based on out-of-date information. Having said that, the action groups have moved on in terms of their agenda, and there are differences over the interpretation of the code. We have repeatedly stated our willingness to meet with the campaign groups under the auspices of the World Health Organization, to consult the World Health Organization on interpretation of the international code, and we remain very willing to do that.
That was Hilary Parsons from Nestle, ending that report by Melanie Abbott. Well, to talk about whether companies can shake off a bad reputation, we've brought together Steve Hilton. He runs a company that advises businesses on how to try to help tackle social problems, and he's just written a book called Good Business, Your World Needs You. And Jim Carey, who's the investigations editor at the left-wing magazine Red Pepper. Jim, I suppose the most striking thing about Melanie Abbott's report is just how long this Nestlé story has gone on, beginning in the mid-70s, a documentary only in 1995, a local manager making allegations again 5 years ago. Does it really matter then if a company has a bad reputation among a few people who feel deeply about the developing world?
Well, there's two things that that situation illustrates. One is how long it takes to get a corporation to recognize the malpractices or the fact that their malpractices might do them harm in the world of commerce. And two, the fact that in this day and age, there is a far greater realization that the society we live in is more corporately run, that corporations have insidiously worked their way into every facet of our society, science, media, culture. We just talked about doctors being bribed to say things then. When you can't trust a doctor, who can you trust? And I think that has gone from a minority concern, perhaps as it used to be in the 70s, to a majority realization that we have an overly corporatized world and that they can't be trusted.
But Steve, when you think about a company like Nestlé, how many people even know, for example, that Nestlé makes Nescafe?
Well, you're right. It's true that so far, consumer boycotts of this kind have had very little effect on the sales of the companies that are accused of transgressions. But actually, they do suffer in less obvious ways. So, for example, the management time that it takes to deal with these problems is a significant cost. Their ability to recruit people to work for them is something that's very important to companies.
Really?
It's really important. It's one of the top issues. They want to hire the best people. People don't want to work for companies that have a bad reputation. There's another cost, which is in the form of lawsuits that often punish companies when they've misbehaved or have broken some kind of code of practice. And then the final point, really, which means that it really is getting more important, is that with the increased scrutiny of companies all around the world, there's no knowing where the next scandal will come from. And so it makes good business sense for companies to really pay attention to these issues.
Jim Carey, do you think we really can scrutinise what these companies do? Because I suppose stories about what happens in the developing world, I suppose I'm thinking about, you know, that Nike factory in Indonesia where workers were being punished by being made to stand in the sunshine all day, and I really mean blistering sunshine, a form of torture, really. They only come out once in a blue moon because somebody bothers to send an investigative journalist over.
Well, and there aren't that many investigative journalists who will be left or who will be commissioned to investigate those kind of issues. It's extraordinarily difficult to pursue these corporations. They spend millions of pounds on their strategies, on their marketing. It's very difficult to get at their strategies because of commercial confidentiality, which has replaced what used to be political accountability. We now have politicians talking about commercial confidentiality as an excuse for not giving us information about these corporations. So it is important to remember that the priority number one of all corporations is to maximize the dividend of its shareholders, and any other priority is way down the list, and they can only be trusted to pursue money. Therefore, it becomes very difficult to trace. I mean, McDonald's spend $1.2 billion a year on marketing alone, and that can create strategies which are very difficult to uncover. And the media and the investigators are not in place to be able to hold these corporations to account. An internal ombudsman are of no use.
Steve Hilton, an internal ombudsman is of no use. What else do companies try, and does any of this stuff really work?
Well, actually, I think that the current fashion in business, which is known by the jargon term of corporate social responsibility, is not enough. The reason for that is that it's not sufficient for companies just to appoint someone or a department of people to look at social responsibility in isolation from their entire business. What they really need to do is throw the entire weight of their corporate power behind tackling social problems in a way that convinces people that they can be a force for good. And there's many creative ways of doing that. In our book, we call it corporate social leadership. What it means is companies doing more than they have to tackle social problems in an active way.
But is there room for morality in the marketplace?
Definitely, because we're living in quite an exciting time where companies are realizing that there's a complete convergence between commercial interests and moral interests, because consumers, now that they have more information about the way companies behave, are ready to act on that and are ready to support with their loyalty companies that they perceive as being a force for good in society.
Jim Carey, do you feel optimistic about it then? You said it does make a difference whether a company is perceived to have a good reputation or not.
It does make a big difference, and over time the longevity of any product depends upon the public perception of that product. I'm optimistic about the number of people that now realise we have an overly corporatised world. I'm pessimistic about the mainstream mechanisms that are in place for holding corporations to account. Just recently we had Roger Scruton, who was a relatively respected journalist in this country. He wrote for the Financial Times, the Wall Street Journal, and appeared on Radio 4 too, who was suddenly discovered to have been receiving a £4,500 retainer a month from a tobacco company. And when you have a respected journalist that works across the whole mainstream multimedia spectrum who can operate like that, we have to be very cynical. We have to stay aware that we don't fall under a spell. The corporations have billions of dollars to create.
I'm afraid we have to leave it there. Jim Carey from Red Pepper, many thanks, and thanks to you too, Steve Hilton. Thank you both.